All right, so it is the 24th of January, and welcome to Genesis class number 3. And we made it all the way through Genesis 1:25 last time, so we're up to people. And of course, I've had many long and wonderful conversations about all kinds of details that we've been talking about during the last week. And I get those weekly questions and stuff anyway, which is really fun. But this is, we're going to move on to man tonight and talk about some really key and important things that we're about to find out in Genesis 26. One of the most, Genesis 1:26, probably one of the most important passages in the Bible. We'll explain why in just a second. But for starters, there was a question that I got asked, which is fascinating. And of course, I just love this. Okay, so you remember that we had these sections and we had these days, and that during those days certain things were being created and we were able to track that stuff. I got asked for more specifics concerning dinosaurs. Now, I'm not going to be on the dinosaur class tonight, but just so you know the specifics of how this would work according to Genesis. Okay? First of all, you'll notice that in Genesis, the plants are first, and we talked about that last time and how important that is, you know, in biology, in evolutionary biology, in history, etc. Plant materials are first. Plant materials do what we called the last class terraforming, where you end up creating the atmosphere, the oxygen you need to have life. But a fascinating thing that you probably want to understand if you are interested in stuff like that, is the reason for dinosaurs. Now, the reason for dinosaurs, how big they were, was oxygen level. So the way this would work according to Genesis, the way dinosaurs work according to Genesis, so if I end up in jail, you know why, because I said that sentence. Okay, but the way dinosaurs work according to Genesis is when you have all that plant life and nothing to eat or destroy the plant life, right? It would ramp up the oxygen levels on the planet, right? All this oxygen is being created, Now, of course, oxygen levels fluctuate. Now we have some trouble. Burn the rainforest, get rid of, you know, large portions of algae, cause phytoplankton problems. All these things we do causes trouble with the ecosystem of the world, and that's why we have ecology and environmentalists and things like that in an attempt to kind of regulate some of that stuff. But the fascinating part of that is that according to the way this is laid out, you would have this massive sort of ramp up of oxygen, and that could, of course, account for very large creatures. Another thing is the bizarre and currently still debated connection between birds and dinosaurs. You probably heard about this in school or on some late night TV show, but you remember the day that they start, that we talked about, which starts with the sea creatures and talks also about birds, and nothing else is sort of mentioned, and that's a little odd. And then we get to things like cattle and all these other land creatures. So this is in the proper order. So just in case you're wondering, if the evolutionary biologist and archaeologist are correct, the ones who are on the side of a connection between birds and dinosaurs would be in the middle of that day. So you would have creatures in the water, you'd have creatures emerging from the water, and some of those, of course, sea creatures would be dinosaurs. For more on that, see Jurassic World when that awesome one comes up and eats the T-Rex. But anyway, what is that called, Bobby?
Which one?
The big giant dinosaur at the end of Jurassic World that eats the super T-Rex thing? Those
but
five would be?
Quetzalcoatlus.
Okay. Quetzalcoatlus would be one of them. See, I always do this to Bobby because he's sort of the another uber geek, and he always has uber geek information. So if I forget something, like the middle name of Alexander the Great's cousin, he'll have that. So that's so as long as we're together, it's one complete dork, really, honestly. But anyway,
Lenny,
yeah. But anyway, so that would be that could very easily, in the scope of the things we've discussed, be the reason that we get those two things named. What do we know about dinosaurs? Bear with me. We know that they emerge from the sea, right, and that they grow gigantic. What do we know about Genesis. We know that creatures start in the sea and that there's tons of oxygen from the plants previously mentioned and they could grow very large. What do we end that day with? Birds. And what do we think birds, where do we think birds are from? We think they're remnants of dinosaurs. You see how this would work? Putting the dinosaur era in the middle of that day, enabling you to date those days, and that's the whole point. The whole point is the Genesis, God, in my mind, is providing exact points of reference, such as birds, such as cows, exact points of reference so that we can provide dating. As long as we get our heads around, you know, evolutionary biology, advanced astrophysics, special relativity, and time dilation, we should be fine. And ancient Hebrew, we should be fine. As long as you get all that, we should be fine. Okay. Anyway, I just wanted to mention that because I got to ask questions because, you know, it doesn't mention dinosaurs. It also doesn't mention pigs or anything. It doesn't mention a million other things either. Yeah. So it doesn't really, you know, that could be a lot of things. I'm not coming hard down on anything. I'm just telling you that does not argue with this specifically. None of those things. That's the point of the first two or three classes, is that in honesty, with the text of both in hand, there is no giant debate happening. Now, there is out there. There's millions of people that are up in arms and hate each other, okay? And you walk onto Cambridge campus with a Christian shirt and they throw stuff at you, and I get it, okay? Don't go to the physics department. They'll put you in the particle accelerator. They hate you, okay? But that's not the way it should be, because it's really not like that. It's not the way it was originally. When this stuff first started happening, people just discussed it. You know what happened in churches when Darwin first came out, when all this stuff first came out? They brought it to churches, and the church leaders said, yeah, God could do that. That was the answer, right? They said, what about this billion-year thing and all this stuff? And they're like, yeah, God's huge. That's totally cool. That was the original response. It wasn't until much later that there was a conflict, that there was a battle. When people started trying to keep certain teachings out of school or tell science teachers what to do or tell religious teachers what not to do, when all this started to happen, this is the 20th century. Prior to that, people were like, what if the universe is 14 billion years old? And Christians went, that's cool. Those are like God days, huh? That's neat, you know? God's day is probably longer than my day. His life is a lot longer. So maybe, you know. That was the original reaction. So there was no like hotly. There's nobody in London in 1880 going, oh my God, Darwin sucks. None of that happened. Okay. So anyway, the passage we get to tonight is absolutely amazing. And it's amazing for several purposes. I'm going to really, really try to get done with Genesis 1 tonight in the third class. But there is just an amazing amount of fun stuff to talk about. But the first thing has to do with Genesis 26. And when we finally get to man, basically, and the way in which this is said, the way in which this is written, is vital for us to understand. So we've got all this stuff that's been done, and here we go. And so God said, let us make man in our image, okay? And that's good enough right there for the rest of the night, because here's what you got to understand. Nachseh, let us make man in our image. Not let me make man in my image, right? So we're at the beginning, we're before man, okay? We're at the beginning of everything. And Nisei, it's got two A's back to back in the pronunciation, so forgive me. I butcher Hebrew worse than I butcher Greek. But Nisei, let us make Adam. That's how you say man in Hebrew. Adam. That's pretty hardcore right there. So if we're going to talk about languages, we need to understand man and Adam and the concept that we have a name, but we also have a concept. Remember how light is a thing, but also a concept? So we have light, such as what's on right now, so we can see. But we also have light as in light versus darkness, as in good and evil, as in becoming a light on a hill, etc., etc., etc. We have a bunch of different idiosyncratic you know, concepts behind the concept of light. We need to understand Adam, because once we understand that Adam, now I'm not going to suggest that Adam's not also a person, an individual person. That's not what I'm, where I'm going with this. We just need to understand that that is a concept as well, because that is a word and it means man in Hebrew. So every time you see Adam, it could very well just say man, right? Now we have a proper name, Adam, and we perceive this as a proper name, and that's fine, and there's probably two different things going on, and God's capable of thousands of things going on simultaneously. So that's not an issue, but I just want people to understand that we talk about the linguistics of it, and we need to understand that this is a word. Bisalmenu, in our image. So, Naase Adam Bisalmenu. Let us make man in our image, according to our likeness. Kidmutenu, according to our likeness. Okay? Now, these words are plural, and it's not one. Here's the fascinating part. How many is it? It's three. I love that. Okay. These are not single words. God said, let us make man in our image and in our likeness. So us, our, and our. You got three uses of the plural in this sentence. Now, could this be translated into what we call the royal we? Now, this is an argument several hundred years old. The royal we is what the queen uses. And the queen's referring to the people of England, but she is the people of England. So she refers to herself as we. She says, we would like to have tea. She doesn't mean all of England would like to have tea. Well, they probably would, but they can't afford it. But she can. But we would like to take a ride to the country. So she uses what we call the royal we. Could this be a representation of royal we? Well, of course it could be a representation of royal we, because God is royal. The most royal, the most high. But that's not what it is. It's plural. So people that want to argue against a Trinity or for a singular God and no other elements to that God would use the royal we argument here. And God said, let us make man in our image, like the royal we. But that's not what it is, right? We know from John 1, which is coming up in 4 or 5 years, when we get to John, there's a reason that we have John and Genesis. When we did this voting and praying and we figured out what we're going to study, there's a reason it was Genesis and John. And John starts in the beginning too, does he not? And he says, in the beginning. And he talks about the Word and God being with man and all of that. We know from John what this is. John is my absolute favorite. Okay, I love the whole Bible, every word, every story. There's a little section of Begats that I can, you know, skip, but I love every single thing about the Bible. But my favorite thing, my absolute favorite thing, is John. And it's because of what we talked about in Revelation, how he was chosen to be Jesus' Moses, right? God the Father chose his right-hand man, Moses, to write the first 5 books. And Jesus chose his right-hand man, John, to write the last 5 books, give or take, right? Revelation, John, and 3 letters. So they both have 5 books. They're both the hand-picked one of the members of the Trinity. This is just blows my mind how this whole synchronicity of the Bible works. But John is the disciple that Jesus loved, and God came down and buried Moses himself. Right? Now, we don't know what that looked like, because he did that on purpose to make sure no one knew where Moses was buried so that people wouldn't desecrate or veneer, or, you know, venerate. You could have, if you had Moses' bone in like 1214, you'd be like parading it around and stuff. And there's all kinds of danger about Moses' body being known. So God himself comes and buries Moses. And that's just kind of shocking and amazing that God would do that. We don't know what that looked like, if he came down as a man or an angel, or if he just moved him. We have no way of knowing that. But these are two very special people to God, right? And they're handpicked to open and close the Bible. They're the opener and the closer, right? And I don't know what that's like in heaven. I don't know if they hang out or they arm wrestle or see who's more important. I don't know. But they're really, really cool. Okay. But John is just this. The book of John is like the guidebook. It's like the spiritual key. You know how you have a map? And on a map you have a key that tells you what these symbols represent? And John is the key. Okay, so the other three Gospels talk about the loaves and the fishes, but John talks about the bread of life, right? He takes it to the deeper level. And so we talk about this, we talk about the origin of the universe or who God is or whatever, but John takes the time to fill that in. Here's how God is. Here's how the Son and the Father and the Spirit work together. Here's why we're going to need to figure out the doctrine of the Trinity. Here's why we need that, you know. And here's how it connects to the Bible. Here's why the Bible is such a big deal, right? And that's John, that John explains that. So if you had this without that and you went with the royal we, you could do without Jesus or the Holy Spirit, really. I mean, you'd have them in different functional capacities. But, you know, if there was a group of people that just had the Old Testament and didn't have John, they might miss something. I'm not saying there's such a group of people out there besides, but they do have a country. But there's a group of people out there that read this as a royal we because they have a singular God and there is no Jesus. The Messiah has not come yet in their world. But we read this and we see something very different. We see direct, immediate reference to the Trinity. Okay? We see God saying in plural, let us do this. Now, the reason I said we could take the whole class up with this discussion is because what does it mean? Kidmutinu. What does it mean to be in His image? But it's not His image. We always say that, right? We say, God made us in His image. But that's an incorrect quote. God made us in their image is correct English. God, a singular word, right? God. God made us in their image. That sentence contains the complexity of the Trinity. So what would it be like to be made in the image of a triune God? What could that represent to us? Because this is a God who is one thing, right? But has these different elements or these different parts, these different people as part of this one thing. That's truly bizarre. It's hard for us to understand. Or is it? And that's why this class could be 40 years long. This one passage. So we're going to sit here until the first person drops. Okay, and then we're going to bury them and continue. Because this could go on forever. Okay? No, but here's what I mean. Up until this class and the Holy Spirit unveiling this, there's been this massive 2,000-year-long debate and discussion about the Trinity, right? And about how hard it is to understand. But remember what was unveiled concerning the concept of evolution and babies growing? Now, I'm not this smart. If you guys think that I'm inventing this stuff, Merry Christmas, because I wish that I was that smart, okay? But I'm not. But the idea that evolution doesn't freak anybody, it shouldn't be freaking anybody out, because that's exactly what happened to you, that you're an evolved creature. You started off as a little single-celled organism floating around, right? Matter of fact, you then became a multiple-cell organism. So for a little while, you were this little nugget of, you know, yummy, little yummy nugget floating around in some primordial ooze-type deal. Right? And then you grew bigger. And then you even had a tail at one point and gills and stuff, right? And then you grew into this thing that had like arms and legs and, you know, in my case, really bright white hair. So you start off at the beginning and the end the same, evidently. I don't know how that works. But you're a towhead at the beginning and the end. But anyway, you became a person and you were small. And then you couldn't do anything. And then you became a person that could do stuff. And then you played baseball or football or rode a bike, and then you got a beard and gained 100 pounds. You understand what I mean? Like, this is And you're going to get old and you're going to shrink again. You're going to start off gigantic and you're going to get small again. And then you're eventually going to die. You're not going to shrink as much. Okay, you're hopefully not going to be baby sized by the end. Okay, but you do. Later on, you start to shrink. It's really weird. Some of all the chemicals that made you start to fade away. It's this bizarre little thing. But you were different at different phases. In fact, you were different kinds of creatures at different phases. So that should mean that if we knew that something did that over a period of time, that shouldn't really freak us out. Well, this is even bigger than that revelation. This is the idea that we should understand the Trinity because we are a Trinity. I don't know if this has ever been said before. I don't know who has written it, if they have, because I never heard it before today. But here's how it goes. You're sitting here right now and you're one person, right? But you have a soul, don't you? You have a spirit. So your mind, let's talk about your mind for a second. Now, granted, there's a brain. There's a physical brain involved. But does a physical brain explain everything about your mind? And it doesn't. There's weird things going on in you that don't have anything to do with just calculations that you can make in your brain. I would say great creations, for instance, might be something. We'll get back to that in a second. The hallmark of mankind is great creations, such as giant pyramids or the Mona Lisa or the Sistine Chapel ceiling or, you know.
Harley Davidson
would be great. That's a good example. There's all kinds of examples of great creations, and there's something fueling that. There's also some dramatic difference. If it was simple as math, if it was like a brain equals A plus B, you know, like there's a bunch of mice, right, at a lab. And the mice don't really have personalities. I don't know if you ever saw 500 mice. I accidentally did. It was kind of creepy. But I bought some mice one time, and I was going to feed them to this lizard that God told me to rescue. It's a long story. But I didn't feed them in time, and then the mice had babies, and suddenly I had like a giant Tupperware thing full of mice. It's a long story, okay, and I don't want to tell anybody because they might have eaten it, the black bear. What happened to those? But just kidding. Chili tastes like chili, no matter what you do. But the point is, it's crunchy. No, that's little bones. Okay, no, I didn't feed anybody mice. But the point is, I had a ton of mice, and now mice don't really have personalities. Now, some animals are very advanced and have things that are similar to personalities. You know, dogs obviously have some idiosyncrasies that make them similar to personalities, probably because they're raised by people, they live with people, they probably pick up on things that we do because we're all weirdos, so the dog does the same thing. It's like my dog, who's never heard a doorbell. My house doesn't have a doorbell. My dog's never heard a doorbell. If a doorbell goes off on the TV, barks at the doorbell. I'm like, what are you barking at? You've never had a doorbell. You have no idea. Where'd you learn this from? Other dogs in the doggy subconscious mind? How does this work? Right? So I don't know about all those connections. Carl Jung, who was Freud's apprentice and contemporary, believed in a thing called the universal subconscious. And this was his explanation for how different people create the same idea. Have you ever had this happen or noticed this? Like this person will come up with a specific idea about how to do with something, and then someone else across the world will come up with the same idea. And it seems like a totally creative thing that doesn't make any sense for those two people to both come upon. Or the explanation of why all these people draw the same alien face. Maybe there are aliens, but more than likely it's something to do with the universal subconscious. Anyway, that's the Jungian theory. The point of all this is there's more going on to you than math in your brain. You know, if you've ever been like overwhelmingly in love or filled with overwhelmed hatred, there's more going on there than a mathematical calculation and firing synapses. Firing synapses are good, but they're not good for dedicating your entire life and dying for other people. Because if they were, they would protect you. You should not ever feel that type of emotion where you would sacrifice yourself. But most military people throughout history, and most fathers and mothers throughout history, which is most people, have had feelings of, I would die, I would sacrifice myself for that person. Well, that doesn't make sense. That's not self-preservation. That's not how you get a blue-colored bird instead of a red-colored bird. That doesn't fit into the puzzle. I will sacrifice myself and die for you. But we will. So there's things about us. There's love levels. There's hate levels. There's people that go a long, long way to do a whole lot of harm and a long, long way to do a whole lot of good. And these things don't necessarily compute. So we have these pieces of us. However you want to think about the soul, however you want to think about the spirit, however you want to think about the physical body. But we know at least you're a combination of things. That you're one thing, but you're a combination of things. So we believe, and I don't want to speak for everybody here. If you don't believe this, talk to me later. We believe that we don't die when we die, that we don't just go into the ground and become worm food, right? That there's a spirit to us. There's something that continues to live. Well, that's just fascinating, right? The spirit, the idea of a spirit. Now, this connects to everything. This connects to ghosts, but it also connects to, like, for instance, the reason they call alcohol beverages spirits is because you take a physical thing and this vapor comes up out of it and comes around and becomes the liquor. That's why they're called spirits, right? This permeates all about our lives, right? The way we function, whether you believe in ghosts or not, or whether you read that book where they're weighing bodies as they die and the bodies get slightly lighter. It's called the weight. It's like 0.5 ounces or whatever the weight is. But they're weighing people as they die. And their body changes weight when they die. By just a fraction. But it's enough to go for scientists to go, something's leaving this body. We have it isolated. It's on a stainless steel table with computers. But something just left that we did not see. Now, I'm not sure why scientists aren't all hardcore believers, because everything they do is feeding into the fact that the universe is bigger than just math, right? But that is a combination being. What I'm saying is that you are one being, but you're a combination. You exist in these different persons exist within you. If you die, the person of your physical body will die. And then there will be a non-physical body running around, hopefully, right? Maybe you'll get a better physical body later that'll be physical when the New Jerusalem comes to the physical earth. We talked about that for months a minute ago, right? When we did Revelation, we talked about how that might look somewhere between the physical world and the spiritual world, or fully physical, however that looks. You don't look like, a lot of people have been cremated and blown apart in explosions. They don't look like that. At the end of time, when they're with Jesus at the wedding supper, they don't look like the burned, blown. They're not a. It's not an ash pile crawling across the table. Can I have another drumstick? It's not that, right? It's a person that looks probably beautiful and angelic, probably the best you could ever look, and glowing, you know, something like that. I don't know. We'll see. We'll talk about it later. Okay, but that's a combination. Is that not related directly to the Trinity? Did we not get in our physical bodies, in our physical existence, representations of what God is about? This is what is blowing my mind. That's why we're camping on this sentence, because we're going to make man in our image, which means that if I was going to make man in my image, that could represent God making man exactly like the person that he is or would want to be or whatever. I'm making this person. But that's not what it says. It says we're going to make man in our image. And that's how we get the parts of us, the soul and the spirit and the physical body. We get a Trinity built into us as well. So we go all the way back to the beginning of time with light and darkness and all these things and separating all this stuff. All this stuff that we've been talking about. And what God's doing in Genesis 1 is setting everything up. Putting everything into place. Putting everything right. Who we are. What it means. How it works. And then we're going to keep rolling. So why is this written like that it is? Because when man is created, it's different than when everything else is created. Okay? So this is why you have a missing link, right? There's a hiccup in the plan. There might be all kinds of evolutionary stuff going on, but when it comes to man, there's a hiccup somewhere. Because it doesn't say that. It doesn't say I made this really cool kind of monkey thing and it turned it. It doesn't really say that. It says making man in his image, so now there's something different. But what is that difference? That difference is the specialness of man. What is the specialness of man? It's being made in the image of God, right? That's what makes man special. Well, if the other things are not made in the image of God, like the whales and the cows and stuff, right? They won't have the same elements. I'm not suggesting that dogs don't have souls, okay? They probably do. I'm just kidding. I don't know what's going to happen with dogs. I don't know how dogs are going to work. We had that discussion a lot in the house because my wife is like, we're not going to heaven without dogs. That's just the deal. So let God know. I know you're like one of his guys, so you send him a note. We got to have dogs. And Andy's got to have golf. He's not going to heaven without golf, right?
Amen, brother.
Amen. See? Can I get a hallelujah? No. The point is that we have these things. You're supposed to be the happiest you could possibly be in heaven, right? Supposed to be overwhelming joy. Now, true. Spiritually speaking, philosophically speaking, this could be a level of happiness and joy that we can't comprehend, and therefore dogs don't matter. Just, and unfortunately, husbands and wives don't matter. Remember, they asked Jesus this. I'm not trying to freak anybody out, but they asked Jesus. He's like, we don't really love like that. It's not really like that. It's a different kind of deal going on up there, you know. So I take that to mean the greatest love I could ever possibly feel is just right below the bottom line of love in heaven. Like as a human being, my greatest possible outpouring of love and affection pales in comparison. It's like a little shadow of how I feel about everything. So just imagine if the greatest love you ever had, let's say it's your spouse, it might be something else, but let's just say it's your spouse, and you love this person with all your heart and soul, and you would die for this person. It's the greatest love you ever had in your life. Let's imagine that. But that is below the minimal possible love level of heaven. Therefore, you would love everyone and everything that ever existed at a rate a billion times higher than your greatest physical love capabilities. Therefore, it's not really like that. I mean, I still love my wife, but I also love every single thing in the universe at a level thousands of times beyond that, because I'm not a physical being anymore. Do you understand? I don't know if that's exactly what Jesus meant. I'm not trying to put words in Jesus' mouth. We'll ask him later to get specifics. We won't care because we'll be so full of love, it won't matter. But if we think about it at the wedding banquet, we can ask him. But I think that I just got a list of questions. I'll be like, excuse me, okay, can I get everyone's attention? Yeah, Peter, seriously, calm down. Okay, I got a couple questions for Jesus. What was this? No, you know, I can't wait. And of course, we're not going to care. It's the end of time. We're not going to die. There's no pain. There's no suffering. There's no reason to ask questions. The only reason we ask questions is because of pain and suffering. I would like to avoid some of that. How does that work? How can I avoid pain and suffering? If we don't have to avoid pain and suffering and it's just nothing but love and happiness and eternal life, then there's not a whole lot of questions. So anyway, but John, by the way, if you want to ask questions like that later, just talk to John. Okay, that's the summary of the intro. Talk to John. But what does it mean to be in likeness? So the point of this is, the other things, the plants and animals, are not in the likeness of God. They're not necessarily totally disconnected from God, except for cats. They're not completely separated from God, but they're not necessarily made in God's image. And you can take that and run with it, because we do eat steak. Okay. So if everything was made, if it said, and God said, let us make all the animals in my image, then we certainly would not be killing cows, right? But that's not what it says. It says, let's make man in our image, and what? Let them have dominion. Now, we need to pay another attention to when we get to the genome project that is Adam and Eve, okay? We need to get with this word that we're about to see, okay? Way you're due. So God said, let us make man in our image and our likeness, and let them have dominion. Okay? So it appears to be that a plural God is making a plural people at this point. That man would be plural. That may be important when Cain goes looking for a wife. But that appears to be what this says. Okay? Let them have dominion over the fish and the birds of the air, the livestock, and over all the earth, and over every creeping thing and that creeps on the earth. So God created man, okay? And we get when it says man this time. So you've got two slight variations of the spelling with a little thing under it when it comes to Adam and Hadam. But anyway, we'll get back to that. In his own image, now this is where we have the his. So what would be the point of this passage reading, God created man in his image as well as God created man in their image? Well, the point would be the triune God. The point is God is one. We can never forget the core of the beginning of Judaism. Okay, God is one. Okay, this is the core of us. Because if God is not one, and they're different beings that aren't connected as one God, then we are polytheistics. We are like the Greeks or the Romans. We believe in a multitude of gods. We don't believe in a multitude of gods. We believe in one God. God is one. And so this is informing us of that. It says God is one, but also God is three. At least it mentions it three times. So, in his image, God created them. Male and female, he created them. We get multiple thems. Male and females being created. Now, what's happening here? We're about to have a story of Adam and Eve, and God's about to make Eve out of Adam's rib, right? That's not what this says. This says he created them. Male and female, he created them. So, we may have either an echo. We don't have an error. That's not possible. And if anybody ever tells you the Bible's full of errors and you have trouble defeating them, please ship them over, because I'm ready. Okay? I just sit around at night with my gym clothes on waiting for those people. Okay? Because there are no errors. People think there are errors, and every single time they bring up an error, okay, we go and find out that it's not an error. It's a translational thing, or it's something that somebody was taught when they were a kid. There are no errors. But we need to read the Word and stay in the Word and understand what it says. And we might have, remember how Revelation, there were some sections that were inside other sections? There were some sections that were telescoped out. There were some sections that were linear. Well, what have we already discovered over the last couple years? We've discovered that Revelation is the end book. Genesis is the beginning book, and those are the book. Those are the two end caps of the book. So they have reflections in them. Okay? They reflect each other. They build upon each other. They mean things to each other. The beginning of time and the end of time have reflections of each other. This is all God's plan, right? So as we read this, we realize there could be structures in here that don't necessarily flow linearly. So there might be something inside of something else. There might be something that refers back to something else. We also have to remember the rule of negative assumptions. Let me explain what this negative assumption rule is. A lot of people have trouble with textual analysis of a text due to negative assumption. Now, the way this works is you're assuming something that's not there. You don't necessarily know it from the text, but you're assuming it. So, for instance, if I said Burl went to 7-Eleven and grabbed sodas and came back, in that sentence, I didn't mention anybody else. I could assume that Burl went with Karen because they're married, they're together, they're here tonight, they went to 7-Eleven together. I could assume that Burl went alone to 7-Eleven because it's all it says in the text, and Burl went to 7-Eleven and brought back sodas. Are you with me? But I don't know. All I know is that Burl went to 7-Eleven to get sodas. That's what the text says. Burl went to 7-Eleven. There could be 27 people with Burl. Right? It could say Noah planted a vineyard. He could be by himself out there planting a vineyard. Try that sometime. Okay? Or you could have 45 guys with him, but Noah's in charge, so Noah planted a vineyard. You understand? You can't make negative assumptions. You can't automatically plug an idea in. Well, it mentions there's 5,000 people getting fed to loaves and fishes. Why does it say that? Because it's Jewish culture. It's a male-dominated culture. And those are 5,000 men. In another piece of the Bible, another cross-reference from another one of the Gospels, we get also women and children. There's probably 10,000, 20,000 people there, right? We can't assume, because it says X, that it means Y and Z too. All we know from Burl went to 7-Eleven and got sodas is that Burl went to 7-Eleven and got sodas. right? We might find out from another book later that Karen didn't feel so good, so she didn't go with him. And now we got a more complete picture of how those sodas got. You understand? So we got to be careful when somebody says, this was done, it doesn't mean nothing else was done. Does that make sense? Okay. So that's the number one textual problem. When people read a text, they assume if it says God created water, then they assume he didn't create air at the same time. You can't assume that. God created water, you know that much because that's what it says. But that doesn't mean he didn't create air. It says God created cows. Doesn't say anything about pigs and goats. Pigs and goats exist, right? But we don't know for sure how they got to be because God created. All we know is what the sentence says. So we got to remember, negative assumption can interfere with thought processing of a text. Okay, so we need to be careful. But we read the text and it says very clearly, God created man in his image. He created male and female. He created them. He blessed them and said, be fruitful and multiply and replenish the earth. Now, I'm not going to spend the next year on the word replenish, but we could. Why on earth does it say replenish the earth? Not plenish. Not fill up the earth the first time. This whole religion is based on that word, by the way. Where people are like, see, replenish. So in the previous existence of man in Atlantis, this is what happened. Bobby, how was that? I'm just kidding. The point is, well, in Atlantis, it was. Now, the point is that replenish is a fascinating, fascinating word. Now, I'll give you 3 points of view about the word umilu, replenish. I'll give you three takes on replenish. First one, replenish is an English word. You're trying to translate a word that says go fill stuff up, you come up with replenish. So textual guys just translating the best they can. They came up with water for waters, that's pretty good. They came up with day for, that's pretty good. They came up with replenish, that's pretty good. So number one, coming up with English for the word umilu, you come and say, okay, replenish. You got to fill stuff up, replenish it, replenish the table. But if you say replenish the buffet, it means the buffet was full before, right? So that's a little tricky, right? This is why when I make, now this is really going to get me in trouble, but when I do my discussions of Jesus drinking, okay, I know, I'm going to get in trouble. But when I do my discussions, I point out that he uses a word when he says, I'm not going to drink anymore till I see you later. But the word he uses is, I'm not going to drink again, which means he's been drinking before. I'm just saying, Southern Baptists are now sending people to my house. You know, my relatives are getting on the phone saying, we felt it. There was a ripple in the force. That he's going to be dancing next if we don't stop him. Anyway, the point is that he wouldn't make wine at a wedding if he thought it was awful. Right? A horrible thing. I don't want people to party at a wedding. That's awful. That's, you know, I'm a Puritan Christ and I don't believe in that. Dancing and why would he go to a wedding with drinking and dancing? Christ is much cooler than the Puritans let on. I'm just saying. But anyway, we go with what we've got and we read through what we've got. And replenish means, now, here's the second possibility from the science fusion section. You ready? Because we've been dealing with the science fusion section. Well, the earth was full before. Of what? Science people?
Dinosaurs.
And then, bam, no more dinosaurs. Somewhere along the middle of the sea and the bird people, somewhere in that like third or fourth day, boom, fourth day, no more dinosaurs. So now people replenish the earth. This is a huge boon for an evolutionary biologist theologian. Because an evolutionary biologist theologian can point to the history of time and all these things came and rose up and ran the world and then died out. And now man has come to rule the world. And in evolutionary biology, this is exactly what happened. Creatures ruled the world, and the thing that would become man later was running around somewhere. Now, I didn't say I'm promoting that we were like a muskrat when dinosaurs were around. I'm not promoting that. I'm just saying that this word, replenish, that's possibility number two. Something else was here. Possibility number three is a lot more scary than dinosaurs, by the way. Because it means something else was here, maybe people before. And that's much scarier than dinosaurs. Because what does that mean? Right? But we'll go with number one. We'll go with it's just a word. And we'll keep rolling. Otherwise, we could be here till the end of time. Okay? Because replenishing the earth can mean a lot of things to a lot of different people. But it's there. It says replenish. Okay. So replenish the earth of doing. What's the AG position on replenishing, Pastor?
There were Germans here first.
Okay, Germans. Yeah, that's good. Patriot fans everywhere.
And us Polish people kill them all. And
that's it. Yeah. That's a tough word. That's a tough word. It is. There's several possibilities. Of course, the guys with the late night TV shows about aliens in Atlantis believe that that's their key passage about Atlantis, right? Because there's this whole civilization and it passed away and now we got to redo everything. And I'm not promoting Atlantis. I'm not saying that those guys did. The survivors of Atlantis went to Egypt on a boat and became the founding of the Egyptian culture and the gods there. I'm not saying one of them was named Horus. I'm not saying that. It's possible, but I'm not saying that. I'm not talking about Atlantis. That's for Bobby to do. Okay. All I know is that something's replenishing something, and that's a little freaky. But man, who now God has made. So whatever it was before, here's the deal. Whatever it was before was not made in God's image. Okay? Because this is where God makes something in his image. He specifically says, I'm now going to make man in my image. I'm going to create man in my image, male and female. That's how it's going to be. That's special. Now, we know it's special for two reasons. First of all, it's phrased differently than anything else. And second of all, it's right here in the beginning of Genesis. When God gave Genesis to write to Moses, if there was this big long section of something else that we need to know about, that would have been in there. It's kind of like Jesus as a teenager. For some reason, we don't need to know that information. It'd be nice to know. It could be anything. Personally, I believe he was a good Jewish boy, probably reading the Torah, probably making a lot of furniture, working in the carpenter shop with his dad, basically busting his butt. By the way, that would also mean that he wasn't a scrawny, long-haired hippie guy. He was a ripped carpenter dude, tan, leather skin, cracking, just, what, right? That's more of Jesus than, hey guys, let's all get a kumbaya, get your guitars. Not Jesus, okay, I'm just saying. He's hanging out with these rough guys. I mean, Peter's got a sword. He's not allowed to have a sword. It's the Roman Empire. He's a Jew. He can't have a sword. Peter's like, I got a sword. What? What you going to do about it? I'm going to cut your ear off, right? These guys were rough. This wasn't like the hippie kumbaya circle. These were rough, rough guys. They were. One of them's called a zealot. Two of them are called the Sons of Thunder. These guys are no joke. These aren't like the mamby-pamby dudes. These will whoop you. Or if you happen to be a moneylender, they may just turn over all your tables and braid a whip and whip you out of the temple. And there's a Roman garrison next door and no one's stopping them. Why is no one stopping them? Okay, reason number one, Jesus. God is on earth. Probably difficult to stop. Reason number two, that's a rough gang of dudes. Those moneylenders, moneylenders that had large amounts of money on those tables had security guards. They had hired guards to protect it. They've got money laying around. What happened to those guards? They got whooped is what happened to those guards. Now, I'm not saying that all that hammering made Jesus buff, but I kind of am. I just kind of am. Okay. Now, I'm just saying, read it. That's not some hippie dude in some white robes with some long blonde hair going up in there. Hey, guys, don't do the money lender. It's not that at all. Read it. It's not that dude at all. I'm just saying that donkey was struggling. Okay. It was more like the rock on the donkey, and the donkey was struggling. That's all I'm trying to say. Now,